Good afternoon, welcome to our meeting. It's 1:30 PM on February 20th, 2024. The time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. To my right is Tony Olson, our Vice President. To my left is Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary. We have with us today John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, our General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please turn off or mute your cell phones or other electronic devices. Copies of the agenda are located on the Deputy Clerk's table near the entrance. Are there any items to be added or changed to be made to the published agenda, Commissioners?
Yes. Add item 1A to add at places additional slide page number four. Oh, no. Excuse me, item zero.
Your microphone.
Oh. Sorry about that, folks. Okay, the answer is yes. Add item 04A dot 01 and at places additional slide page number four.
Thank you. Comments from the public is item two on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on the agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and person shall be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the Deputy Clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial star nine if by phone. Attendees will be called on to speak at the appropriate time. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners and not the audience. If you have documents or materials to enter into the record, hand them to the Deputy Clerk, who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions have an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to a floor of discussion. So if you'll please join me in the flag salute. First up on our agenda is item two, comments from the public. Are there comments from the public on items not listed on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So first up, we have Dave Daring. Daring?
I'm gonna wait a minute.
Okay, this is a public comment period. That's fine. We have online, we have Hans Sunji. Mr. Sunji, I think you're muted.
Yeah, I was. Little technology there. Sorry about that. My name's Hans Sunji. I'm from Snohomish, and thank you for your public service. I am commenting, or what brought me to the meeting, and I apologize for not being there in person, is the rate increase that I saw listed in the paper, and actually I'm not opposed to it. But what I am cautioning on is raising the base rate and what that does to conservation. As you found in water, people tend to, if they have a flat rate, tend to not think about conservation. I am recently into the solar panel world, and I am ignorant on most of what I'm gonna talk about here. So I apologize for that. The issue you will have with solar, as you know, is that it, right now my solar panels are producing great power, but from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock tonight, when you need to provide power, more power, my panels will be off. And what you should concentrate on, if this is my recommendation, is storage and sort of beginning to think about this. One of the advantages we have in this state is a tremendous amount of hydropower, which also is possible, I think, for an opportunity to use for storage. In other words, you produce power now, use the power off of my solar panel to pump water back over to the up upside of a dam where then it would be released and creating power in the evening. That is a thought. The PUD, I think, is the perfect person or people to lead this effort because it's obviously a nationwide and statewide problem. The Snohomish County PUD has a great history around the whoops issue, and the legislature a few years ago with the PUD financed some big storage batteries. It didn't work out, but not all new ideas work out. But what I would ask the PUD to do is to explore this idea of hydro storage with whoever. It's obviously Bonneville and others, and might solve the variability of solar issue. Those are the comments I have. I would love to explore the issue with the PUD, and I will get myself more up to speed on it. But thank you for what you do again, and that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Dungey. Okay. See no one else online. Next, move to item 3, our consent agenda. 3A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of February 6, 2024. 3B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. Call for motions. Do we have any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Seeing any or any online? Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments on the consent agenda items?
I do not. I do not.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next, item 4, public hearing. 4A, 2024 budget general electric revenue and adjustment. I'll now convene a public hearing on the 2024 budget general electric revenue adjustment with Peter Donhauer here to provide a presentation. Good morning, Peter. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Peter Downhauer, the senior manager of Rates, Economics, Energy Risk Management. We have a few updated slides on here that I wanted to point out and also as well ask Scott Jones to speak to. I do want to also point out that there was an update to slide 21 that I can speak to. The small sort of textual update, I believe it's slide 21. But also just wanted to ask if the rest of the presentation is desired to go through the whole presentation again, or how you'd like me to proceed on that.
I would like to see the full presentation. I think it's
good. Okay, then. Let's get into it. Again, our purpose and agenda here is this is the public hearing that we're going to do today, and the presentation has a few areas here, the background of our 2024 budget and some recent events, our redesign approach, and the proposed adjustments that would be effective April 1st, as well as some comparisons to other utilities in the area, and then finally next steps. We've also included here the appendix, which is a full listing of all the rates that would be changed. So before we get into the rate design component, wanted to perhaps look over my shoulder at Scott and see if you'd like to clarify a little bit what's happened in 2024 here.
Thank you, Peter. The next two or three slides are just
Scott,
in response.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Scott Jones, I'm the PUD Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you.
Thank you. I never remember that. The next three or four slides are inserted into this presentation just in response to some questions that we had at the last meeting. So we're going to just rewind and try to get a good encapsulation here of some background, just so we've got it in the public hearing record.
Last 18 months, and really it's probably getting close to 24 months, if you go back to the summer, early fall of 2022, that's when we started talking to you a lot about supply chain issues, about inflation issues, and some of those kinds of things. So a lot of what we're talking about here has happened from a materials and supply chain and labor standpoint over the last 18 to 24 months. We've had some power supply events that we'll talk about that have happened also over the last two winters. You've seen some of these things before, but we've really started to experience some pretty significant cost increases over the last 18 months to 2 years. Transformers are something that we talk about a lot, and we've seen increases upwards of 100%+ on prices there. Vehicle fuel and maintenance, as fuel has obviously been hovering a lot, but maintenance costs have been increasing pretty steadily as well. Wood and metal pole prices have gone up at least 50%, some closer to 60%. Wire prices and cabling have gone up a lot. I'm going to flip forward. I'm going to come back to the second section on this. We just added this slide this morning. This is the one that Commissioner Wolf mentioned. And so let me just point a few things here. This was in response to a couple of internal questions on just further clarifying some of these things. So cost increases in warehouse. If you look at our warehouse inventory, it's a good example of how our cost and volume increases have happened. Our inventory value is close to $60 million as of today or yesterday. That is up almost double, a little more than double, depending on the day, over the last 5 years or so. A lot of that increase has happened just over the last couple of years. About 20% of that is probably pricing. Some things have gone up a lot more than 20%, but across the board, we're seeing increases across. We carry about 10,000 different kinds of materials, and we're seeing price increases across almost all of those. The rest is also an increase in volume because we've had some challenges with supply chain issues. We're carrying more volume now when we can. And so in some cases, the inventory levels might be thin because we're having supply chain delivery challenges. On the other hand, if we have an opportunity to pounce and get more, we do. We have historically ran what people in my world would call a just-in-time kind of inventory scenario where we order and have pretty predictable delivery timing. That's not really something that we can rely on as much now. So the prices have increased and inventory volume levels have increased too. When you drove around ops, you would see we've got things spread around all over the parking lot and everything else. One thing to keep in mind too, that increase also impacts the operating reserves. We talked this morning about operating reserves, and if we're carrying double inventory value, that's consuming 20 or 30+ million dollars in cash as well. We're sort of taking that cash and kind of putting it on a shelf for use later. So it does consume some operating reserves. On the bottom section here, you'll see a lot of our increases we're seeing in those transformers. The transformers and wire, cabling, transportation, some of those things we highlighted earlier, that accounts for around 20% of our normal capital costs in any given year. So just for magnitude of dollars, about $23 million of our capital program for 2024 is within those few categories we're talking about that we're seeing really sharp increases on. Another big category for us in O&M and capital is labor. And historically, we looked this morning, historically, labor has been somewhere around the low 20% of our O&M and capital costs. It's more into the low 30% now. And that's not with a remarkable increase in our overall capital program or our overall O&M programs, but it's just, you know, a steady increase of labor pressures and benefits and competitive labor costs and things. One other thing that I'll point out here too is vendors. Our vendors are grappling with it. Tree trimming, our cost for TrueCheck, for example, for our meter reading program, they're wrestling with many of the same issues. So we're seeing a around 20 to 30% increases on service cost as well. So all of these things, of course, are contributing pretty heavily into our cost footprint. Go back to this previous slide. We've talked a lot about power supply, and I realize we're continuing to hit this mantra on power supply, but it is a really, really big deal for us right now, and especially the last two winters. If you go back further, we've had some events that date back to probably 2019. If you look at the last two winters in particular, we've been driven very heavily. December of 2022 through about April of 23, and again, starting in late 23 and into early 24. Electrification is driving demand. You'll hear me or Jason or John or a lot of others talk about that. You heard that during the IRP process with Garrison as well. Electrification, the state and the region are pushing electrification a lot, so that's driving a lot of demand. There's nothing wrong with that, but it drives our demand very, very significantly. And when you combine that with a generation resource portfolio that's providing less power to customers, we have a basic old school economic problem in supply and demand. Demand is ratcheting up very significantly. Supply opportunities for the types of generation resources and things that we can use, just don't have the same suite of generation resources that we would have had 20 years ago or 40 years ago. So the market's playing very differently today than it was even 5 or 10 or 15 years ago. Our existing hydro resources, and Jason reminds us of this frequently, so I want to make sure I say this out. Our existing hydro resources are extremely critical. They're extremely critical to get us through these peak times, but our region is experiencing very low water resources right now, both last year and into this year. And so it does impact the availability of those hydroelectric production resources. That lack of other available options, it just creates a big challenge for us. Magnitude of dollars, just over the MLK weekend, we are somewhere in the range of $100 to $150 per megawatt hour is what we budget into for market prices over the course of a winter. We saw prices upwards of $900 to $1,000 per megawatt hour. You're talking about 7 to 8 to 9 times, 800 or 900% higher. So as we talk about these pressures, these are the things that we want folks internally and you as our board of commissioners and the community to appreciate. We are doing everything we can. I'll go to this last slide. We're doing everything we can to manage through these things, but these are very, very big challenges for us. The power supply challenges in particular are very heavy. And go to this last slide. So how did we get to where we are? If you rewind back to December of 2021, we had, for 2024, we had a 1.5% forecasted rate increase. Now, December 2021 was before the supply chain challenges. It was before some of the inflationary increases that we were seeing. It was before a couple of these big winter events. We were operating under a strategy of very small and incremental rate increases at the time. Fast forward one more year, so December of 2022, we were approving the 23 budget. We had a placeholder in the 2024 year of a 2% rate increase. We started to see some supply chain and inflation impacts, and so we bumped from 1.5 to 2. And then as you fast forward through the 2023 year, we really started looking at the 2024 budget late last year. We moved that from 2 to 3.8. This is after a very costly winter, the previous winter, a tremendous amount of cost cutting and prioritization and reprioritization of budget costs going into 2024. And we still felt the need for the 3.8% rate increase. And then you all approved that budget with that 3.8% placeholder in December. And lo and behold, in January, we had a $40 million event. And so that's how we got where we are. I said this at one of the previous meetings, and I'll just say it again. The 5.8% rate increase, this additional 2% that we're recommending, does not solve this problem. It is a step in the right direction. It benefits us probably $8-ish million this year. Next year, it's more like a $20 million benefit. For 2025, it's probably more like a $30 million benefit in the following year because of the compounding of our rate plan. It's not a single fix. It's a great first step. We don't want to go too much on the rate increase right now. We want to see how the year plays out. We've got other arrows in our quiver that we want to take a long, hard look at before the end of the year. But this is why we made this first step recommendation. The last thing I'll just mention here really quickly is, you know, what are we doing? We're not recommending any more cost containment. We went through a very, very lengthy process, some would say painful process, last year, spring and summer, to reprioritize our programs and our projects, pull back on a lot of spending. We did the same, a version of the same, going into the 2024 budget year. So we're not, I think the leadership team here is not recommending any more cost containment today. We might have to look at that again later this year, depending on how the year plays out, but that's not the thing we're recommending right now. We have done, I think, a pretty good job on debt management. We don't want to over-leverage the organization with too much debt. We are a fairly lightly leveraged organization, and I'd love to keep it that way. We've had two placements in the last couple of years. I spoke to those this morning in 2021 and 2022. We have two additional debt placements planned over the five-year forecast. I think one in 25. Oops, Sarah's in here. 25 and 27. The challenge there is we want to use debt smartly. We want to use debt when we can get it out of the market, when we can get good rates. We also don't want to use debt for assets that are short term. We don't want to use debt for, you know, buying vehicles. We shouldn't use 30-year debt for a 10-year vehicle, for example. So we can't necessarily use debt for everything we buy. We're trying to be very smart about that. We think we've done as much as we can there. Rate strategies, that's why we're here today. Reserves, we talked about that this morning. We're going to be coming back with reserves. But we're trying to use all the arrows in our quiver here when we can, and we think that we've got at least the best plan we can right now. With that, that's my few slides. We'll kick it back to Peter for the rest of the presentation, but we wanted to at least take that deep breath for the additional context in the open meeting here. John, I don't know if you've got other stuff you want to add there too.
Any questions for Scott?
No. Not at this point, no.
I just have one question. Have we heard from any ratepayers? The news of the increase has been out on the wire about a week ago.
Let me ask comms folks and Peter.
Aaron Swaney, lead communications specialist. Yeah, we put it on the wire, the story came out in the news the other day. I have not heard from any customers. I'm not sure what customer service has heard.
I want to ask the clerk. Oh, yeah, perhaps you're not done yet.
I was just going to say surprising.
Okay. I will ask the clerk if customer comments came in.
We've only had, you know, maybe one or two that we forward.
Yeah, we wanted to be as transparent as possible, so we put that in the e-wire, which goes out to about 285,000 customers.
Shauna Bozer, interim AGM of customer service. And I'll just say to the call center, we have had minimal calls. A majority of them have just been asking questions about how this is going to impact them or how much their bill will go up specifically. It is in the article, but they want to know more about how theirs is going to be impacted, but it has been fairly minimal so far.
Thank you.
Any follow-up questions,
Peter?
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
All right, I will also add that we've been proactively reaching out to some of our larger customers. So just so you know, we've been doing that as well. Okay, so I'm going to maybe say a few more things before I pass it over to my colleague Christina, who's going to go through some of the details of the redesign itself. But overall, what we're doing here when we look at the redesign is we first of all look at the revenue requirement. That was the number that we looked at and spoke about just a minute ago. That's got referenced 5.8%, and we use that budget to determine that overall amount. That basically gives us the size of the entire pie. Then we use what's called the cost of service analysis, a model that we look at the projected costs and the usage patterns between the classes, and we determine how much of the revenue requirement is caused by each class that we have there. And so the question is what sort of slice of the pie goes to each class there. And then finally, we do the redesign itself, where we determine how to collect the revenue with the specific charges that we have available in the design. That's per month or per kilowatt hour or per kW, as the case may be. So that's a general sense of what we do. As well, here's just an overview of some of the rate classes. Our main rate classes here is Schedule 7, by far the largest consumer of all energy, and our about two-thirds of our retail revenue. These are single-family and multifamily homes. Schedule 20, grocery stores, hotels, light industry, schools will typically fit within here. These customers are a little bit larger, have peaks of over 100 kilowatt hours, and on average consume about 930,000 kilowatt hours per year. We have our special continuous, which is telecom providers, utility providers. This is one of our second smallest classes, our legacy time of use class, which is manufacturing, only one customer here. And then our general small service, which is Schedule 25. This is convenience stores, banks, and churches. This would be under 100 kW demand. And then our large primary service, Schedule 36, which is our largest customers with over 5,000 kW. Six customers here. And finally, our lighting classes 1, 3, 4, and 5. Okay, now I'm going to hand it over to you, Christina, for our cost of service results. Would I answer any other questions?
So, Christina Lineweber here to deal with the cost of service results. So, there are three steps to a cost of service analysis. In the first step, the functionalization, the costs are divided according to what part of utility service it is, like generation or distribution. In the second step, those divisions are then further sub-analyzed to answer the question, what part of energy usage is driving this cost? And in the third step, those previous analyses, plus actually looking at the characteristics of the class itself, result in the actual class results. Most of our customers are the residential customers. So when you're looking at how to raise money from the overall system, it is important to remember that you can't do anything without touching the residential class. They're just too big to ignore. Now, when we do our cost of service adjustment, that is a first step. It's not a single answer that you just automatically follow, because there's a lot of qualitative aspects to making rates. And one of the qualitative aspects that's very important to all utilities is to make sure rates are stable and that rate changes are made gradually so that customers can slowly step into the new rate and don't have rate shock. And so as we did our cost of service, the raw numbers came out with some pretty large adjustments for some of the classes. But we're making a recommendation to take some smaller steps this time, with the understanding that there's always a next year to make another adjustment to get closer and closer to cost of service. Now, once you've got that overall percent that you want to collect from each class and that overall dollar value that you need from each class, you have a wide variety of ways you can collect it, from fixed and variable charges. And that is the final stage of actually setting up the rate, which is making that rate design, which again takes the quantitative analysis and adds some of those, the quantitative analysis and adds some of those qualitative elements and aspects of judgment. Here for the residential rate design, we have kept our plan to continue moving into a slightly higher daily customer charge here. So right now, the daily customer charge for the smallest customers, which are the majority of the customers, is 22 cents. Even if we didn't have a rate adjustment, even if everything were to be kept as without a plan, we would still anticipate moving to a 36 cent daily customer charge for those smaller customers and similar moves for the other customers. But with, of course, a lower energy rate if we were to keep everything neutral. However, sadly, as was previously explained, we cannot keep everything neutral. We need a rate increase. And so that's the third column here, actually increasing that energy charge, bumping it up once again, so that overall we get a higher amount of revenue from this class from all points of the rate. Any questions?
Questions,
commissioners?
No.
When we say scheduled, that's what we approved last year.
Yes.
Okay,
yes. And here's some example slides of what that would look like for a representative customer. Again, most of our customers are either in the small or medium customer charge categories. We have very, very few on the two higher amounts. So you can see the current, what they're paying now, what they would have been paying according to the previously approved rates, and then a increase for this actual rate increase. And it's a similar story for the medium. Of course, the values are a bit larger, but same idea. And then merely the numbers for the other two customer classes. And of course, no customer, very few customers will be exactly this amount, but these are typical for those particular rate subcategories. And the point of all this, and the reason that the customer charge was introduced in the first place, was to get to this point where currently you can see the blue there in the little donut graph shows the revenue that we anticipate to recover from the customer charge, which is a fixed flat throughout the year, and how that slice is growing for utility stability and also for customer stability to not have so much seasonal variation in their bills as well. Now for our commercial classes, we are suggesting that we put all of this in the customer charge. So you can see planning on keeping the energy charge the same as we currently have, and putting in the customer charge and then the minimum charge. And the same for the medium commercial classes. Again, putting a large amount of it in the customer charge, a little bit in the demand charge, and a little bit in those second tiers of the energy charge, but keeping a consistent first tier of the energy charge. And that's what's suggested by the cost of service analysis, that those are the elements that need to be slowly stepped into place. And then for our large primary service, these are the updated numbers, but the same percents as you saw before for these rate customers. They don't have a customer charge, they're so large, but they do have an energy and a demand charge. And we have meetings set up, or in some cases have already gone forward with meetings with these industrial customers to make sure they understand that this is happening and these bill changes are coming. We think that even with these changes, we're going to be well in the middle of the pack of our peer utilities. This bar chart is from 2022, it's the last sort of checked comprehensive data from all the local utilities. But we do also know that some of our peer utilities have already released rate increases for 2024 that they have either gone forward with or plan to go forward with. So some of these here in the column graph, the columns here are a little bit tentative, but certainly we know that all of our peer utilities are facing these same inflationary increases, both with the power market, since we're all operating in the same power market, and with the materials and supplies inflation. We are having here at the public hearing. We hope to come back in 2 weeks to get the final approval. And in the appendix here, you can see the rates for all of the rate classes as well, in case anyone wanted to look at them in particular that that I know are new in this presentation for your interest. So are there any questions?
Questions, commissioners?
No, Tony finally got it now. Thank you. Customers that may be listening in are on Zoom. One might, if I was a customer, I might say, well, your energy portfolio is having these huge spikes. And I don't want to leave the impression with them that we're just shrugging our shoulders and saying, oh, well, that there is a significant amount of work that is going on and studies in terms of changes in the market and how it functions. So that's another part of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And I just want our customers to understand.
Yes. This is the first step of many years to come.
Well, that's actually a great point, Commissioner Wilson. We have the teams really looking at our energy risk management plan and how do we navigate the near-term future with basic supply and demand issue that Scott has articulated. And again, our best way and most immediate way to do that is through the energy risk management process and strategy.
Question slide 40, our income qualified residential rates. So when I look on our website, it says our rates are 25 to 50% discount. These
are not a 25%
discount. When I look at it, I realize I moved the decimal place. Okay. I made a wrong calculation too. So
all right.
Help me understand what this is.
Yeah, this is a little bit of an artifact. And it's actually an artifact not only before my time, but before my predecessor's time. So when I got here, I actually asked Brian Booth, why do you have this low income residential rate that's an infinitesimally amount smaller in its energy charge than the existing residential rate? And he said that at some time before him, they had had a different low income program and they had had this differential set up. And it doesn't really make sense anymore because we have this nice big bill credit that's applied to the bill, as a full percentage discount to all their charges at the end of, sort of at the bottom of the invoice. So we're sort of stepping, but this legacy is sort of in our rate code that we have this differential rate for those low income customers, even though it's less than 1% lower. So what we've been doing, and he had sort of a schedule laid out for this that I've just followed, is slowly stepping them closer and closer to the residential rate. And you'll see that we, have in there a proposal for them to have the same customer charge. So inch by inch, inch by inch by inch, and we're almost there, we'll converge them with the regular residential rate, and everyone will then be on the same residential rate and just get that big percentage discount put on the end.
So this is the rate to which the percentage is applied to?
Yes, yes.
Wow, I did not understand that.
yes, sometimes these artifacts slide into the rate codes and it takes a while to step out of them. But again, especially for low income customers, you don't want to take a big step of the rate, just inch by inch.
That's very helpful. So do we take the discount off both the customer charge and the energy charge?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or follow up, commissioners?
Appreciate your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Good job.
So are there any comments from the public regarding the 2024 budget general electric revenue adjustment? Anyone in the room wish to comment? Since seeing nobody online, so are there any further questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have none.
Okay, thank you. I'll call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2024 budget general electric revenue adjustment.
I move the public hearing on the 2024 budget general electric revenue adjustment be continued to Tuesday, March 5th, 2024 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, Washington.
Okay, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next is item five, items for individual consideration. 5A, consideration of a resolution authorizing the manager real estate services to execute all necessary documents to purchase certain real property, tax parcel number 270-513-00200200, with an address of 8520 180th Street, Southeast, Nohomish, Washington, as the future location of 115 KV ring bus and other district facilities, and recognizing the current structures on the property are surplus to the needs of the district. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Yeah, Maureen Barnes will be able to answer any questions. Firstly, if there's any comments from the public on this item. I haven't seen anybody in the room. I'm not seeing anyone online. Do you have any questions, commissioners?
No, I don't. I have no questions.
Yeah, we're thoroughly briefed on this, okay. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next, 5B, consideration of resolution authorizing the manager real estate services to execute an easement amendment of an easement previously granted by the district in favor of the city of Everett that allows the city to operate, repair, and maintain a recreational trail in a portion of the power line corridor property of the district commonly known as the PNT right-of-way, located in the city of Everett, Snohomish County, Washington. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, we have Maureen Barnes here. I'm very busy today, available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. I'll first ask to see if there's any comments from the public on the resolution. I'm not seeing any in the room, and I'm not seeing any online. But commissioners, do you have any questions or comments?
I do not. I have no questions. I appreciate all the work on it.
I do too. I think we're almost to the home stretch, so thank you, Marie. Okay, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next, we have item six, our CEO General Manager Report. You have a report for us, John?
I do have a couple items to share. First one we did touch on this morning, but I just want to mention it again. The district's new Enterprise Project Governance Board, led by Serena Fothergill, partnering with Doris Payne and Laura Wilson, led our first Enterprise Project Prioritization Session. This collaborative event brought together representatives from various teams, project management, and stakeholders to chart our course for the upcoming year. The objective of the event was to enhance visibility and alignment to district strategies while prioritizing the most important projects to achieve success. Again, it's just a huge kudos to the folks that have stood that process up. It'll help us immensely going into the future. Our energy services team met with BPA to discuss and get approval to include the clean buildings projects to be accepted as part of our commercial strategic energy management program. These projects will now also be reimbursable, which is a big success as we help our customers bring their buildings into compliance with this new law. We see it also as another recruitment tool for developing future cohorts. Customer service to improve our budget payment plan process. An adjustment was made to our variance list to review and adjust at 25% as opposed to the previous 30%. Once a customer is on the budget plan, if their set plan amount differs by more than 25%, we will review and adjust the plan accordingly to prevent the customer from paying too much or getting behind on their plan for the year. The customer is notified when the adjustments are made. And also, or lastly, or one of the last items, and I'm super excited about this. Over the last few months, a group of women have been working to determine how we can make what was our women in public power even more effective at serving women at the district. After months of research, reflection, and conversation, Women Empowered or WES SnowPud launched, and they have held their first event last week. Nearly 100 employees attended a panel of powerful women featuring our own Kim Johnston, Sherelle Gordon, and Lauren Briggs from Tucson Electric Power, and Lucia Schmidt from the Department of Emergency Management here in Snohomish County. We intend to hold quarterly meetings moving forward. Just super proud of that team, and the team was led by Laura Lemke, Hunter Burchard, Monica Gorman, Amy Brown, Casey Dahlbeck, Jennifer Mullen, and Kelly Stickney. And just, again, huge kudos to the folks that have stood that process up, and really excited for that in the future. A couple things on my end. I've got NWPPA board and executive committee meetings in Vancouver starting tomorrow through Friday, and then I'll fly to DC on Saturday for APPA board and executive committee meetings through the middle of next week. If you answer any questions.
Questions? Sure.
No.
I wish you well with all of that. That's great.
What year do you take the chair for APPA? Is it next year?
APPA is next year.
Yeah.
I think NWPPA is this year sometime, whenever they make that transition. I'll find that out tomorrow.
So you'll have both organizations?
No, they'll be staggered. I'll do NWPPA first, which again is at some point this year for a year.
Oh, all right.
There may be a couple month overlap.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a comment, I'm thrilled that we have 100 people participating. That's an acronym I can't remember.
Women in Power.
Women in Power, that's pretty easy. Yeah.
We.
We, yeah. That's wonderful.
It's very cool.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully, maybe encourage, women in power, but women in business,
yeah,
to local, to come in and participate or be on a panel. And has there been any thought to, perhaps there might be other women in our service area that are in business. Would that be of any value for them? Or are we really just focusing on the industry?
I would say we are initially focusing on us and the industry, but I'm going to pick on Laura Lemke. I noticed her in the audience.
Laura Lemke, Senior Program Manager and Chair of the Women Empowered at SnowPud Board. Our purpose is really, as we examine who we wanted to be for and what we wanted to be about, is about the women who work here at the district and is supporting our DEI initiatives and our efforts to make sure that everyone can feel welcomed and included. That said, we're treating 2024 as a building year and ensuring that we can successfully host and put on the events that we want to do internally. And then we have long-term conversations about what does it look like to get engaged with the larger community. We're just trying to ensure that we prioritize the use of our time and resources and focus on being here, about the women here at the district, which is actually the impetus behind the change from our name of Women in Public Power, which is kind of externally focused, and being Women Empowered at Snohomish PUD.
There's another organization called Snohomish Leadership or Snohomish Women in Leadership, and there's some overlap because I've been involved in that, and Allison and I attended one of their meetings. I think it's great that you're doing this. And when we go to our conferences, they usually have special times for women in power.
Yes. And we are very much leveraging the connections that we have into the other women in power groups across the industry and figuring out how to get better engaged with local groups.
Thank you.
Are you referring to leadership so much, Connie?
I guess it is. I'm not sure.
Any other questions for John? Next is item 7B, our commission business. 7A, commission reports. Any reports, commissioner?
After our last meeting on the 6th of February, I went to Portland, 7, 8, and 9 for UCMPNAC, and those were great meetings. And I was going to say a little bit about those, but I forgot the materials, but maybe next time. But those were, especially PDAP, was very enlightening, I thought. Yeah, we learned a lot.
Awesome.
No.
Yeah, I'll underline what Commissioner Wolf said. It was interesting to see different versions of analysis of the weekend, the cold snap, and the impact on the region. And, you know, just underline again that we don't know how close we were, but it seems like we were pretty close to running out of power in the region. So, just a comment. You know, at lunchtime I was thinking over our morning session and talking about our strategic plan, and I'm just so impressed at how authentic the work is. That, you know, it ended up driving our budgeting process, prioritizing. So it's one of the most genuine ones I've observed. So that's off to Laura and everybody else here. So I'm sure it's very painful for some departments to start applying new filters. I can appreciate that. Okay. Next is item B, our commissioner event calendar. Are there changes to the commission event calendar?
Tomorrow we're going to Lake Tulalip.
Yeah. Then next we have item C, our 2023 district performance dashboard. Any questions or comments about the dashboard, commissioners?
Other than what's good reading.
We got some of this this morning too.
This morning's looks a lot. Expanded.
Okay. Next, we have item seven, our governance planning calendar. Made A. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar, commissioners?
Should we skip D?
Oh, we did. Sorry, 7D. 2023 Treasury Budget Forecast and Project Status Report Final Results. Any questions? We have Sarah Bond here to answer any questions. Sorry, it ran right into the dashboard for me.
Well, we've had a lot of reporting on this today. I don't think I have any further questions. We're going to just wait and see.
Commissioner Olson, it's page 203 or packet.
No, I'm there. I'm just reading my.
Yeah,
I just make notes to Tony and. Yeah, I have no questions.
Okay, I have no questions either. Thank you. Okay, now on to item eight, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to governance planning calendar?
I have none.
I got a good gist. Commissioner Olson, give me.
No. I'm on the wrong calendar. We're touring. We're going up north.
Friday's North County, correct?
Friday's North County.
Mm-hmm. We have to wear mitres.
You can wear your heels, but
I just want to know on what part of it.
There's an email with more information that we're going to send out later this afternoon.
Okay, good. Thank you. Good. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
About what degree of completion do we have? Is it like three quarters completed?
You're going to give away the tour.
I know, but I just want a preview.
I would say 80 to 85%-ish.
Should we wear boots?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that matters.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Any other changes?
I have none.
Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board today? Commissioners, John?
None of the business.
Hearing none, it is 2:23 p.m. and our meeting is adjourned.